That's right, decisions. All right. And you got to make the right ones. All right. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. And we have, actually, this is a show I've been looking forward to doing for a while. And at the back end of it, we're going to be talking with the writer and some of the actors from the play Mama Metal. And we'll talk about that when we get there, but it was a really disturbing play and one that kind of shakes you up for a while, and it'll be interesting to talk with people about that. But opening the show up, you know, there's something on a much, you know, on a very important level, and we've been talking about this for quite some time now, maybe since early March, but things have been developing, and this is, we're going to be talking with people about a tour, you know. This is what we're going to be talking with people about, and we've been talking with you about the tour that's been going around the country, and it's making a big difference in the world. It's I'm looking for something, and so I'm just going to stop looking. Yeah, it's a tour that we've had here for quite some time. We've had a number of times they've come in, and they basically have spoken to basically what's going on in the society, what's going on here, but more large in the society at large. They've been speaking about the role of the police. They've been speaking about the system, the need for people to stand up and not just speak out against this, but to actually act against this. And I'm going to stop babbling here for a minute. I want to make sure that we get the people on here and we spend as much time as we possibly can. Sitting to my left is Michelle Chai, who's a regular appearance on this show. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael.
And to my right is Lenny Wolf. And Lenny's been on a couple of times since he's been here. And welcome to the show, man.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into this, because why don't you explain to people what the tour is and why now?
I think maybe the first thing to do first, I want to say that we are planning something very, very special and very revolutionary for this whole weekend, but in particular on Saturday. And I'm going to ask people throughout the show to go to tune into revcom.us and really get continually. I want you to tune into revcom.us and follow this tour on social media. But this tour, just to situate this, look at the news today. Look at the situation we're in right now. You look in the paper and it turns out that Trump, for all the opposition he supposedly encountered and did encounter to a certain degree from other people in the ruling circles in this country, is probably going to be able to force Mexico with this threat, open threats of economic warfare, to partner up with the United States in making the United States basically a gated community, to keep people out whose countries have been destroyed both environmentally but also socially, politically, and economically by the United States, who are desperately trying to flee for refuge somewhere, to keep those people locked out and locked down. And this is, so you've got this going on with both the naked imperialist threats of, in this case, economic strangulation, economic force, but also not too far underneath that, the military threat. Then you've got this same weekend, we're celebrating 50 years of the Stonewall Uprising, where LGBTQ people heroically stood up and fought back. And yet at the same time, at the very same time, after 50 years, what seemed to be a real turning point on just some recognition of people's basic humanity and human rights, you have not only this wave of murders of trans women, and in particular black trans women, that's been going on and that has not really been covered, but you also have this administration singling out and going after trans people in a whole variety of ways, in terms of protections being stripped, rights being attacked, and other things like this. You've got the whole violent reassertion of patriarchy, and it is violence when you're forcing women to have babies against their will. It's enforced enslavement. It's very violently invading somebody. And I do want to say that part of what the tour did, you should go to revcom.us and see there was a very good action, both at a performance of Les Mis, where the tour was able to disturb the air, to challenge people and polarize the room and bring people forward and tell the truth. But also, last Tuesday, where the tour called and demonstrations, not only in L.A., but in a number of cities, of people calling on women to wear the bloody pants. And Michelle's got interesting experience to sum up from that. But then also there's on TV this week, it premiered last Friday, has been the story of the Central Park Five. And there's a movie that shows how systemic and how societal white supremacy is. And I want to just urge your listeners to watch this. But I also want to bring up two things from that. I heard an interview on this station with Ava DuVernay, the director, and she concluded the interview. And she said, there's five young men somewhere in America right now going through the same thing the Central Park Five went through. And the Central Park Five, of course, were these five young men who were accused of the rape and attempted murder of a white woman in New York City 30 years ago, and who were the victims of what was it's kind of ironic. They labeled them a wolf pack. These were five young men who had never even met each other before being accused. They labeled them a wolf pack, but in fact, the whole city of New York was transformed into a wolf pack, howling for the blood of these teenagers for whom there was no evidence against whatsoever, and who were all exonerated when the real culprit stepped forward years later. But yet, who led that wolf pack? Who got on TV? Who took out full-page ads in the press calling for their death? That was Donald Trump. That was his first entry into political life. And he's never, to this day, he maintains he was correct. And this is the person who is now heading up everything in this country. And all these elements, everything, the most ugliest things about this society, the utter misogyny, the American first jingoism and chauvinism towards peoples of other countries, and the white supremacy is now concentrated in this regime that Trump heads. And this is the world that this is taking place in. It's a very extreme situation humanity faces. And I want to ask, just to kind of get into this, I do want to ask all your listeners to go to revcom.us, listen to the speech that was given last summer by Bob Avakian on why we need an actual revolution and how we can really make revolution, and listen to the way in which he draws out the fact that we actually only have two choices, to either live with this, and I have to say, which is only going to get worse and worse, and to have this go on into the future, if there's even going to be a future at all, or to make revolution. And that is what this tour is posing to people. What is the reality we face, and what do we need to do about it? What do we need to do about it? We've got to make revolution. That's the message of this tour, and there is a role for everybody in that. So that, I just wanted to kind of pull the lens back and situate things in the situation we face. And then we've got what we're doing this weekend and what we're actually doing today, which we also want to kind of alert your listeners to.
All right, and we'll get into that. But I do want to say that actually I think that's really important, because this whole point about people this weekend are going to see in a lot of ways, you're going to see the first forces for an actual revolution stepping out in a way that they hadn't, that haven't stepped out before. You know, and this has the potential for really changing things dramatically, you know, and it's not like it's going to be a magic pill, but there's actually, it's putting things out on a basis that really has not been very common in this society at all. It's been a long time since we've actually seen something like this, but it's actually something that's promising, something that's even bigger and, you know, much more than what we've ever had in this society. And that to me is a major part of this. Michelle, how about you?
Yeah, well, I just think, just in everything that Lenny's talking about, and just thinking about the world that we're living in, and then, you know, and in particular, like, I've been doing a lot of work out at the high schools, you know, out in South Central, and just seeing all these youth, right, and the world that they're coming up in, right, and when you actually talk to them, how much they care about the world that they're growing up in, you know? And here you have, you know, and we've had some of these administrators straight up tell them, we're not going to overthrow the system in a day. You should go to college. You should, you know, do something else, basically, you know? And then this challenge that Lenny put out, right? The two choices that Baba Vakin speaks to, right? And these are not just like some two choices out in the abstract. These are real choices that everybody has to make, you know, and that objectively right now people are making, right? Whether it is because they are turning their faces towards revolution and they do actually want to see an end to this, or whether they're just going along and accepting this and throwing their hands up in the air and saying, well, there ain't anything we could do about it, right? And, you know, and these two choices, which, you know, he says we have two choices. We either live with all this and condemn future generations to the same or worse, if they have a future at all, or make revolution. And, you know, and so, and it is to some of these, it does speak to this point about future generations and how for so long people have lived through and seeing, you know, and this is why this is so important about, we're going to get into in a minute, right, about Saturday and the so many people that have for so long have gotten used to just burying their loved ones over and over and over again, and have just gotten used to seeing their neighbors and their loved ones and their family and their friends go in and out of prison. And they have just gotten used to it. We talked to somebody who said, well, there is nothing we could do about it. And I'm just going to continue to put to tattoo the names of my loved ones who have been buried on my arm. Why would you want to accept just continuing to fill your body with the names of people that have lost their lives because of this system? We don't have to accept that there is a way that we can actually stop this. And the only way to put an end to this is through an actual revolution. And here we have the leadership in Baba Vakin, you know, that has developed a way out of this, you know, and here's a force that is going to be marching together on Saturday, you know, from different backgrounds, different nationalities, you know, different life stories coming together because there actually is a way out of this.
Tell me this, you know, it's very heavy what you're talking about, because you're talking about a tour that's built up around revolution. And this is something that actually is not real common in this country, to be nice about it. But it's actually, you know, it does actually, there's actually something more that you bring to this, because you're actually, you folks are out there and you're actually doing this. You know, and you're speaking truth to people about this. And I wanted to ask you, and I guess I can ask either one of you, but I'll start with you, Michelle, in terms of what it looks like, you know, and what's it going to look like, what it looks like now, but what's it going to look like on this weekend? If people are sitting back at home now and they're thinking, okay, well, there's this demonstration and it's going to be happening, and it's the National Revolution Tour is going to be having this series of actions, and maybe I should be there. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so I guess just to give people a sense, right, on Saturday, June 8th, right, it's more than just a protest, right? It's actually people coming together. And some people maybe have seen, maybe have not, but we have these T-shirts. And on the T-shirt, it says, BA Speaks, Revolution Nothing Less, revcom.us. And this is an iconic shirt that people know, right, that people see us in the neighborhood, people see us in, you know, Chicago and New York and different parts of the country, spreading revolution, spreading the leadership of Baba Vakin, right? So on this day, I want your listeners to picture this, right? Picture a couple dozen people on these T-shirts marching in a very disciplined way, right? Projecting a different future in contrast to the ugly culture and the ugly, you know, what is posed in front of us, right, of what this system represents and what it, you know, what it gets us to go along with, right, the relations between men and women, the going along with the destruction of the environment, going along and accepting just all these horror after horror after horror, right? And so you picture all these people, right, coming together, different nationalities, different backgrounds, different ages, all representing this revolution, all wearing the same T-shirt and declaring, we have a way out, and we are traveling the country and we are organizing people into this revolution because we are sick and tired of this, right? And this is the slogan of the day, is enough, basta ya, revolution, nothing less, right? Enough of this system continuing to, unleashing their murdering police to go into these neighborhoods of the oppressed, right, and harass people and, you know, put them in handcuffs and go through all their, you know, stopping them in their cars and, you know, going through all their stuff and then putting them in jail for a bunch of BS, right? Enough of that, right? Enough of this system and their, you know, the destruction of the environment, the way that they're keeping women in chains, right? In this moment, right? They're keeping women in chains. When you take the right of women to control their body, you're basically saying that she's nothing more than a slave. And that's what's happening right now, right? And so on Saturday, we're going to be starting on Crenshaw and Slauson. It's a place that a lot of people know right now because of Nipsey Hussle, who, you know, was shot down in front of his store. And this actually struck a chord amongst a lot of young people that saw somebody who actually cared about this section of society. You know, when all the time these people in South Central are just kicked to the side, are just told that they ain't nothing, right? And this is something that I've been sharing very recently, right? I grew up in South Central. I grew up in these streets, and I know this feeling, you know? And I went actually to one of the high schools that we've been doing some work in, right? Fremont High School. And I remember one of my teachers, you know, where I didn't go to class a lot. And I came to class one time. I had a friend who was, you know, trying to look out, and she was like, come on, let's go to class. You know, so I go and we're reading Shakespeare and I'm stuck, right? I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And so I ask a question and my teacher says, I'm not going to spend any time on you because all of a sudden you decide to come into my class and ask a question. It's not my fault that your brain is so small and you're so stupid. Mm. That you're not going to, you know, I'm not going to waste my time on you and explaining any of this. And I want you to get up and get out of my class. And she kicked me out, you know. And this actually was one of those moments that, you know, people look back in their life and they remember these things, you know, because I ended up internalizing that. I ended up accepting that and embracing that, that I was too stupid, that I wasn't capable of anything, that all I could do was just, you know, try to figure out whatever in this messed up world, right? But then you're growing up in a neighborhood where you see all the time, all these people, you know, you see them all the time, your neighbors, your friends, and you see them getting handcuffed in the corner. You see them, you know, you hear about so-and-so getting shot down the block. You hear about, you know, hear all the gunshots all the time, and you see people, you know, being picked up by the ambulance. You just see it all the time, and you're questioning what's going on, you know? And this is one of the things that, this is why it's so important, you know, and I just really am fighting for all these young people to watch Baba Vakin, you know, because you just hear, and this was one of the things that actually struck me was when he was talking about those youth in particular and explaining and walking through, this is what they go through all the time, you know, and I remember hearing him talking about the gang injunction, right? And he's talking about if you have four or more youths hanging out in a street corner, the cops can just come and mess with you. You know, you think about that. If you're a youth in South Central and you have nothing going on and you go and hang out in a corner with your friends, right? The cops can just come and mess with you and it's accepted and it's okay, you know? And then he's actually getting into why this is happening and how we can actually put an end to this. And more than that, he speaks to these youth in particular. He spoke to me. You know, that you've been told all your life that all you deserve is a bullet in your brain and a boot up your butt. And you, that is not all that there is for you. There is a whole different way that the world can be. And you actually have to play an important and key role in this revolution. And that's when I decided this is what I'm going to do. And not ended up accepting what my teacher told me. And what I'm sure so many youth in this society are told all the time is that they just have to accept that they ain't worth anything and that they're going to die anyways and that this is just the way that the world is, but it's not. And there is a force and we're going to be out there on Saturday spreading this message and actually saying get out of that and get into this because you are a key role in this revolution.
All right. And just before we go on to this, I have to let people know that you're listening to The Michael Slate Show. And we're talking today with Lenny Wolf, a representative of the Revolutionary Communist Party and an advocate for the new communism brought forward by Baba Vakin, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And we are also joined by Michelle Chai, a member of the Revolution Club in Los Angeles. And keep tuned in to this station and this show because it's you're really going to get something that you don't get normally. All right. And Lenny, what were you about to say?
I just have to say I'm still sitting with the story she told. And if it had been the only I've never heard that story from you, but unfortunately I've heard that from too many young people in this movement. And I'm very, very angry right now. You know, because this is the stakes in a very real way of lives being squandered and mutilated and potential being cut off. This happens all over the world. That's what this system does. One more day is too long for the values and the commandments of this system to be setting the terms and enforcing it with their armies and their cops and everything and their weapons of mass distraction, telling you it's all right. And it's those people's fault. Enough of that. Basta ya. And that's, you know, that's going to be what's setting the terms. That's what sets the terms in our points of attention, which we've been getting out, which is a whole different morality, a whole different way the world could be and what needs to happen. That's what's going to be setting terms at Slauson and Crenshaw. It's something different. And I'll be honest, it's something that's a lot of people resist. And the question is, are you going to get out? You know, you said earlier, you were kind of getting into something, Michael. You said, look, you know, this is kind of unusual, just going straight out with revolution. Yes, it is way too unusual. And the whole history of what's passed for a revolutionary movement and a communist movement has too often been, well, you can't ruffle the conventional wisdom. You can't give people the full scope of what's going on. And what Bob Avakian's been leading a cultural revolution inside the Revolutionary Communist Party. Precisely, one of the key things is precisely, are we going to tell the truth? Are we ourselves going to confront the truth and dig for the truth, no matter where it leads us? Or are we going to go for what's politically expedient or what can get you a few people around you? No. So we have been going out in this tour and doing exactly what Michelle said and going up against the conventional wisdom and going up against the ways people have made peace with this, the tattoos on the arm. But at the same time, we've been doing this with very, very broad arms. Wherever you can unite, whatever you can do to advance this, get into this. Be there Saturday. Be part of this. Spread this on social media. Yes, and learn more about it as you do. And as you learn more about it, become more active. This is a process. This is a process we're setting off, but the goal of this process is precisely what she said, a world where that doesn't happen, where that's not the rule of things, where whole sections of children, whole peoples, whole continents are told to leave class, figuratively, if I might borrow from what she said. This is what this stands for. This is what this is about. And if we don't, you know, there's a lot of things to cover about what this weekend's going to be. We're going to be, there's going to be a demonstration at this 77th Division. They're having a 150-year celebration of the L.A. Pig Department, okay? And it's going to be at the 77th Division, which was where the Watts Rebellion of 1965 kicked off. And we're going to crash their party, politically crash it. But you're going to be something that, you're going to see something there that I trust, I can say with a lot of assurance, having been in this movement for a long time, that you have not seen before. You're going to see a message sent. And there's permits. This is going to be legal, but it is going to be a strong, strong message, a revolutionary message. And we are asking, if you've had enough You need to be there. If you want to check out a real alternative, and people who aren't just talking, we're going to form a force of thousands in the next year that can actually and actively change the political complexion of this country so that the millions who right now, yes, they're sleepwalking through a nightmare, as our slogan says. They're lining themselves up to vote for a party of war criminals and people who've committed crimes against humanity as their only alternative. This force of thousands is going to actually change the whole face, the whole complexion of what people think is possible in this country and, frankly, in this world. Those are our ambitions, and those are the ambitions we need to have today. Okay, because the situation, as I said last time I was here, the hour is late. And as I, you know, and as Michelle was pointing out, you cannot have one more day where the kinds of things that she described go on, both to herself and the people she was, the instances she was citing, this cannot be allowed to go on. People have to take a stand against this. And here is where you can take that stand and then get on into things and learn more and do more as you do.
Well, tell me something. How, and actually this might be, you know, look, there's a thing of saying that, and then there's a question of how do you work people through that? Because people, I mean, look, there's a lot of people out there who are looking at what's happening in the world. They're looking at how they're getting, you know, just, as you said, the stuff that Michelle just talked about that is, yeah, very moving and all too real for so many people. And then there's a question of actually people thinking that, you know, you had just started to talk about this, people thinking that, you know, look, we've got so much, you know, to do to just survive. And if we step out, we move one way or another, the pigs are going to be on you in a minute. You know, there's that kind of, and then how do you actually step up against this? Because I was thinking about even this thing about the audaciousness of the audacity of actually being at the, you know, out in front of this police station. Really good, you know, really. And actually, in some ways, unparalleled in terms. And I think it's actually, it's important because it's not just unparalleled in sort of like a band of people standing up against the police, but it's actually what it's putting out to people in terms of what needs to be done and their role in this. And it's something that you got to fight through because otherwise, you know, people live in a society and they're told, keep your head down, do this, you know, make your way through. You know, you may get screwed over, but just try to make your way through and eventually it'll be a place in a corner somewhere where you can just breathe easy, you know. And I think it's important to actually just dig into that a little bit. You want to say something around that, Michelle?
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking about like the LAPD 77th Division, right? And why we're actually going to be out there is not just to protest, you know, on the one hand, yes, it is. These pigs are notorious, okay? We've been going out across South Central and we've been talking to people. And when they hear that we're going to be in front of the 77th Division, they say, oh, okay, yes, you know? And it does, you know, because they know these pigs are known for this, you know, for unnecessarily messing with people, putting them in jail, you know, and killing people, you know? But what they actually represent, right, is not just terrorizing people in South Central, which they do, but it's actually what the police in this society, what their actual role is, right? And there's a quote from Avakian, which I'm just going to talk about the first part because I'm I don't have it on the top of my head, but he says, the role of the police is not to serve and protect the people. It is to serve and protect the system that rules over the people, right? And, you know, and people can find that on the website, revcom.us. But this actually does speak to what their role is and what they actually represent overall in their whole system. And we're going to be at the 77th Division actually declaring, right, that our determination, right, to put an end, you know, to their terror and their whole system, not now, but when the time comes, right? And we have a strategy to actually make that revolution when the time comes. And as Lenny said, right, with this tour, at the end of this tour, aiming to have organized the thousands, right, that can actually lead those millions, you know, and to really put an end to this. You know, I just wanted to share really quickly, I guess, maybe this speaks to your question, but like some of these kids at the high school, you know, that we've been going out to. And we were out there with the bloody pants to represent, right, what happens to women when abortion is actually taken away, right? Is women would use coat hangers to, you know, to induce their own abortion and they would bleed out and they die, you know? And these are young kids that some of them, don't, you know, they weren't alive when this happened. You know, I wasn't alive when abortion was illegal. But we were out there with these pants, and that actually struck something, you know. All these young women that actually came forward and were like, yes. And seeing a sign, you know, that basically speaks to what women are not. You know, women are not, this says a whole bunch of stuff, but basically punching bags and breeders, you know. But women are actually human beings. And this spoke to, you know, their aspirations and their anger, you know, about wanting to see an end to this and stepping into this revolution, you know, putting on that revolution t-shirt. And people should go to the Twitter page, which is at Tune Into RevCom, and see some of these videos, you know, the including a high school student who put on this t-shirt and actually talked about, you know, women and how she sees, you know, the difference between women being treated as sexual objects and as punching bags and what women actually are, which is full human beings and the aspiration to wanting to get to that world, you know. And so, you know, and there's been a lot of just posing this question, right, which, you know, I know we've said it twice already, but I want to say it again. You know, we have two choices. We're either going to live with all this and condemn future generations to the same or worse if they have a future at all, or make revolution. And we've been going out with some of these provocations where we give them a multiple choice question, A or B. A, live with all this. B, change it all. For B, step into this revolution, put on this t-shirt. And when people pick B, we actually have them make it real. Because again, it's not an abstract question. You actually have to put some meat behind that decision, you know. And how people are doing that is by putting on this t-shirt, is by spreading this revolution, and by taking responsibility for this in their school. And so, you know, and so this is some of the response that we've been getting out at the high school, you know. And it's, you know, and it does actually, you know, you can see the potential, you know, and especially what Lenny was talking about, right? The potential that gets cut, you know, short, right, by their administrators, by this system. This is some of the experience that we've been having. And I think, you know, we're going to continue to, and then you're going to be able to see some of that, you know, on Saturday, you know, all of these people that have stepped into the revolution, putting on these t-shirts and marching together, right, and actually representing. And actually, here's one thing, is this is one thing that has been, is a really heavy point, right, but being one of the first, right, in the face of everyone, you know, of this not being popular, of people just accepting this, of people going along with this, of people laughing at, oh, whatever, you know, heard somebody say, make some comments about, oh, well, there's nothing we could do, just throw our hands up in the air and blah, 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 whatever, you know. But in the face of all of that, these people that are actually stepping into this, that are putting on this t-shirt, and that in front of their school, in front of their friends, you know, that are in the face of their administrators coming up and saying, no, 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 don't do this, go to school or go to college. They're stepping into this, right? And what that actually means is just really precious, you know, to have some of these kids and not, some of these people, you know, at UCLA. That's like so beautiful to see, like, some of these pictures online, you know, of a banner that they made that says Bruins for Revolution, that they're going to be bringing on Saturday. And this point of crossing the tracks, you know, I never met anybody from a university like UCLA until I came into this revolution. I never met, you know, some of these professors or some of these people from like different stratas until I came to this revolution. And you have some of these people that probably have never even had a real conversation with some of these youth in South Central, in, you know, in the life, you know. And you're going to have that, you know, crossing the tracks, coming together, you know, on a different side. You know, they're carpooling from UCLA to, you know, to this site at Slauson and Crenshaw. And they're going to be coming together, you know, representing a different future. And this thing of the first, right, and that courage and that, you know, is just something really important, something to really uphold and to, you know, and to amplify and to multiply. You know, it's something that is so needed right now in the face of everything that Lenny started off talking about, right? That is the world that we're living in. And in the face of that, these people are saying, I'm putting on this t-shirt and I'm coming out here and I'm representing something different and I'm going to go to work on this revolution.
Yeah, Lenny, go ahead. Just chime in on that? I think that's very, very important, everything she was saying, and including a lot of the experience that Michelle has been speaking to, some of which, a lot of which you can see if you go to revcom.us or tune into RevCom. But I do want to say that you raise the question of fear, and we get that, okay, and understandably so. understandably so, because of what this system is, what it does every day, and what it does to people who step out to oppose it. We're quite cognizant of that. But the question is, you have to go back to the reality. First, in the sense that Michelle was saying about there's only two choices. But then there's something else to the reality that's a big part of the reality, and that somebody has figured out a way to understand the world and to analyze the world that people can use to actually see not just the strengths, which are real enough, but the weaknesses of the enemy we face. Somebody has figured out a strategy that could actually defeat them and overthrow them, and that could marshal the force. Of course, we know we don't have the forces now to do that, but somebody's developed a strategy that shows us how to do that. And somebody's developed a constitution that gets you to a whole different world, okay? That is the first step in getting to that whole different world where the people can rise to their full potential. And once again, nobody is ever told it's they have to leave class, okay? So I think that's part of reality, and that's what we bring to people, reality, science. And that's how you overcome that fear. You understand scientifically there's a basis to make revolution, and you go back to that basis. I guess we don't have time. I would start talking about people who do free solos and the ones who actually survive, you know, the rock climbing thing. Forget it. I'm leaving that alone. Next time, Michael.
All right.
But I do want to say people have got to, you've got to confront the reality, and you've got to look up. You've got to look up in the largest sense to the world we could be living in, the world that, yes, it's going to be hard, it's going to involve sacrifice, but it's the world that we could be living in and that the 7 billion need to be living in. You have to look up and see that, in fact, those 7 billion, when you step up and put on that shirt, even when you come out to look at others who put on that shirt and to be there in solidarity and support if you're not ready, and that's important too. That's important too. But those 7 billion, they are, whether they know it or not right now, depending on what those people do, what we do, what you do. Okay, and I think the other thing I want to say about look up at the sky is look up at the sky today. Look up at the sky around 3 o'clock, you'll see a message. Look up at the sky, or look at least at the when you're driving home, you'll see a message. Okay, because the revolution, this is a revolution that has, we have a lot of realism and materialism, and we have a lot of imagination and a very lofty view. And that does, I just want to close. The point that Bob Avakian's made. It's very dangerous to lead a revolution if you don't have a poetic spirit. And this revolution embodies and has to embody that poetic spirit. And there's a whole lot of thinking and 150 years of experience and all, and actually much more than that, that goes into that quote. And it's worth pondering and thinking about. That's, I think.
Okay, that's very good.
There's a really simple way that people right now listening can just pull out their phones, go on their text app, and text GET FREE, one word, GETFREE, to 55222. So text GET FREE to 55222. And you will be signing up to the Revolution text message. You'll be getting a welcome message, and then you'll be getting updates from the revolution here in Los Angeles. And so that's one thing that people could do right away. The other thing is, while on your phone, go to Twitter, Instagram, and follow Tune Into RevCom. That's TuneInToRevCom. That's the Twitter, Instagram handle. Follow Tune Into RevCom for the updates, for seeing everything that, you know, that we've been doing out at different parts of the city, right?
Of what this revolution stands for are going to be embodied. People come to this, and you'll find out and come. And then the next day, we're going to have a conference where people, young and old, new and not so new to this revolution, are going to get down and figure out, okay, how do we go forward from here? What's next? How do we do this?
This is extremely important, folks. It's one of the most important shows we've done in a long, long time, and I think everybody should be listening up, thinking about what's been said, and also just what both of them just said, talked about the need for you to step up and step out into this, all right? This is extremely important. I mean, we're dealing with times that we have never seen before, and we're dealing with answers that happily haven't been there before but are here now, and a real chance at turning all this back, all right? So changing the world, okay? That's what we got to do. And I want to thank Michelle Chai from the LA Revolution Club and Lenny Wolf, a veteran communist and fighter for the new communism of Babavakian. And both of you, come back when this is done, all right?
Yes.
All right, so next week we'll have you both back. All right, we're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. Simone.
Yes.
All right. Before we move into our next interview, I do want to talk about why I have chosen to run this interview about the show Mama Metal today, even though many of our listeners will not have immediate access to the play. I feel very deeply that the interview you will hear today is one that you should hear, especially in relation to the world that we live in today, as it draws back a curtain to reveal the reality faced by so many Black women in the world today. And if you are interested in having the play staged in your area, please reach out and contact the playwright Sigrid Gilmer. First name Sigrid, Sigrid, last name Gilmer, Gilmer. Now let's check out the interview. Right now, I saw a play, I guess it was like a week or two ago, and it was, I have to say, you scared the hell out of me.
Okay.
Right. In the beginning, I was like, why is she yelling at me? And then when you said, you know, get out if you want to leave because otherwise you're stuck here. And I was like, all right, I'm going to be stuck here.
Yeah, okay, cool.
And I was happy because I wasn't stuck there. I was there because it was really a dynamite play. And you were incredible. So let's go through the introductions. You tell people who you are.
Hi, I'm Courtney Sauls, and I play Sterling Milburn in Mama Metal.
Mm-hmm. And
I am Lee Sherman, and I play Louise Bell Milburn in Mama Metal.
And
I'm Sigrid Gilmer, and I wrote Mama Metal.
Yes. She trumps us.
All right, yeah. We're going to jump into this real quick. What the hell were you thinking?
My mom was dying, and I was grieving. So that was the writing the play was sort of a way for me to process what I was going through.
It was very heavy because, you know, I know, Courtney, when you were saying this thing, it was just like, you know, you're opening, and there was just so much rage, but there was also a softness that was there that was just, and it seems to run through your character, you know, through the whole thing. And so why don't you tell people what your character is and, you know, what was going on with that?
Well, Sterling is Sigrid's, I guess,
alter ego.
Yeah, I would say. She is obviously dealing with the impending loss of her mother. And I think there is a hardness to Sterling she has learned how to kind of cope with the world or deal with the world with this barrier. But it's basically a protective mechanism, I think, a defense mechanism so that she doesn't feel, but she feels deeply into her core. So as you watch the show, you see her trying to gather, you know, that exterior, that armor, so that she can continue to push forward. But ultimately, right, it dissolves and you, it's, she's like a turtle, is what I
think. Now be careful. You can't tell people how it, what, don't get too far into it.
Yeah, I won't get, yeah.
Lee, let's talk with you.
Yes.
Okay, your character actually in particular really, I mean, both of you got into it. And I had to look at you because you had this transform so quickly between someone who's locked in a situation where you basically have no real ability to interact with the world on any serious sense. But then actually throughout the thing, and this is brilliant in your writing, it's actually because, because throughout the thing, you actually do, you rise up to this, to these occasions, and you actually come out and you school your daughter a little bit.
Yes, I do.
Tell us about that.
Well, so Louise Bell Milburn, and one of my lines is once vital and strong with purpose and pride. So that is Louise. That's all that she was until the Lewy body dementia took that from her. And so I'm still that inside, even though my body has betrayed me. And so as I'm going on this journey, and part of it is Sterling's recollection of the past, and part of it is mine going, no, that's not how it was. And I need to let you know how it really was before I leave you, so you can stand on your own two feet. I'm going to give away a little bit of the beginning. So Sterling, in her opening monologue, says, by the end, we're both going to be dead. And the moment she says that, me as Louise, like, no. That's not how we do it. Because I've had to overcome so much adversity in my life, and I was able to do it and do it so well and give Sterling such a wonderful, well,
yes.
materially a wonderful upbringing. You know, everything, I armed her with everything that she would need to be successful. And so I hear her say that, and it's like, no. That's not how we roll. That's not what we do. So
we don't give up.
No, we don't give up. We absolutely do not give up. And so it's that me being trapped in that body, but being of sound mind and sound thought and sound perseverance in that sense, even though my body has betrayed me, and going, nope, I've got to lead my daughter to her strength.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sigrid, yes, having written this. Do you have trouble sleeping at night?
No.
Are you scared?
No.
I'm actually teasing about that. But the thing is that, look, you know, you've done so much with this in terms of these characters. And I do have to say that really in the opening of it, when it was like, okay, should I run for the door? Because the character, you know, your character was just sort of like, from the beginning, like, you know what? I'm the boss here. Mm-hmm. And you shut up.
This is my story.
You guys are quick.
Sorry.
She's got it.
And yeah, you're gonna go on the ride, and you're gonna go on this ride that I've created for you.
Which, of course, you offered up a possibility, but to leave then, but then you'd have to walk right past you.
You never know.
Nobody's done it yet.
But let's talk about what went into this, because it's really interesting on so many levels. You're talking about, okay, before your mom died, and people you can see that in the play, but then there's other levels to this, including, you know, one of the things I thought that was really interesting too was, the men were very secondary in this, in a certain sense, and it was kind of refreshing. It was really refreshing, and including and you had, you know, the two playwrights,
yes,
and you had the, and then the other thing that we're going to talk about is metal, because I share an intense like for metal.
Oh, okay? Right on.
So I go home and I just.
Who do you like?
We'll get into that later. But I just go crazy with it, and it's sort of among. I like all kinds of music, but you know, it's when I'm particularly sitting alone, you want to turn that really far up, and the neighbors are all like, "Oh God, here it is again." But let's talk about this, because these are things that don't normally appear in relation to a play that has that. You know, first off, it's rare that you get something that's like funny, makes you laugh, but also puts you on edge, and the ability to do that is really important. You know, and I think it really brings home that what you're doing. But then to sync that with metal, sort of like, okay.
Yeah, it's so funny because it makes sense in my head. It's just sort of how my mind works. In sort of working through my mom dying and the grief, it just made sense to me that their grief is such a disparate, crazy ride. That you're mad, you're sad, you're scared, you're always living in you're living right on the edge of your emotions. And for me, like writing the play and trying to create that similar sensation with the audience and looking and using metal and the sort of titans of theater kind of figures, the playwright figures, for me was like grasping on things that I love, and for me that things were that were central to me in a time where everything else that was central was collapsing. So it was like grasping at the theater because it's one of my main loves, and grasping at metal because it's also something I really love, and sort of using those as sort of, I guess, handholds to kind of move my way through my world that was kind of falling apart and like changing and shifting.
You know, it's interesting too, though, because you also you the men that are in the thing, and they really do play a secondary role. Which is really, I mean, it's very cool because it's, you know, even a lot of times when people try to have that, they're going to have the guys be a secondary role. It's very hard to do that because of the whole way we've been trained in society. But you guys were able to do this. And I have to say, it was like, you know, there's that constant scene you have of the metal band.
That
is great. And it's really intense. And I wanted to ask you about that because it's like it keeps coming back and forth. And it's not something that's like sort of side on the sideline. It's actually at the heart of the characters in the film, in the play.
Yeah. I think to the point about like the men being on the sidelines, I think for me as a writer, I find I do realize this, but women are human beings, and so if the story's about them, then it's about them, and whoever's supporting them is supporting them, whether it's men or women. Mm. But in this instance, it happened to be a group of men that were these two women, especially Sterling, support system. So they serve as the secondary characters that happen. Like that's part of the sort of the structure of drama and sort of If Sterling and Louise are the center, then those are the people who surround it. I don't even think I even thought about that in terms of them specifically being men, but it's like they're a heavy metal band and it's like comprised of dudes. So,
but there's also there's a scene in there where there's a man on a scaffolding, and there's clearly a relationship between that man and your character, Courtney. You know, where there's, you know, there's just this sort of reaching out.
That's my character.
Mm-hmm. That's your character.
That's my character.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's Louise. Yes.
Okay. All right. So tell us about that. Because to me, that was just, I was looking at it and said, wait a minute, this is very different than what we see with most of the men being in metal and then these tiny little shorts and all this other stuff. And then you see this person up on the scaffolding, and there's clearly something that was brilliantly deep. Without even exchange of a word, you know, it was like, it was just really heavy. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, right. So that is Brendan, and he is my husband, my third husband, and he has passed before I have. And so in Louise's world, she has memories, and that's what she really relies on. And Brendan is a wonderful memory that just makes me feel good. And so throughout, when I'm on stage, I am remembering Brendan, but that is where you get to see the interaction between the two of us. So he, for Louise, that is the relationship that was the most loving, the most caring, the one that saw me in all my strengths and all my flaws and accepted me and loved me for that. So he's my heart. And so that reaching out, he's already passed, and so I'm reaching out to him, but he's just a memory. He's still just a memory. So even in the dancing, it's a memory. But it's also a point in the play where I am ready to go. I feel like Sterling is almost ready for me to go, and I'm ready to go. I'm ready to release this body and just move on and be with Brendan finally.
Okay, don't release that body too quick.
Okay.
And unfortunately, we're going to have to move. But I have to say, and there's a point where that interaction with you two leads over to your character, mm-hmm. and the fact that you know, in a lot of ways, the heart that's there in the entire play is really remarkable, and I think it carries it through. And you've done, Sigrid, you've done an amazing job.
Oh, thank you.
It's funny, although I do have to admit, there were scary points, and there were points where I was just like, you know, I was just so moved by it. You know, mm-hmm. it was sort of. So I think that ability, people really need to see this, and. You're going to have to tell me where. Okay, here it is. It's at, do you have?
Atwater Village Theater.
Mm-hmm. Right, the IMA Theater Company.
It's Atwater IAMA.
IAMA.
Yeah. The IAMA Theater. IAMA Theater Company. It's at Atwater Village Theater. Mm-hmm. And it's
3269 Casitas?
Yes, okay. Yes, yes.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, pretty good.
Right. And it's Friday through Sundays, mm-hmm. 8 o'clock Friday and Saturday, mm-hmm. and 7 o'clock on Sundays.
And we have this weekend and then two more, so yes. Come out.
Plenty of opportunities.
I'm telling you, folks. Don't miss this play. It's a really brilliant play. It's really funny. It's also causes you to do a lot of thinking afterwards. Mm-hmm. I felt a little odd sitting there and not clapping while, you know, as rapidly as all the other people. I was clapping, but I was like, oh my God, look, yeah. Awesome. It's a really moving play, and you've done remarable jobs, all of you. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you so much. All right. And we're on our way out of here. So I'm going to try and do this really fast. I really want to thank my engineer for today, Lisette Tapia, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. And actually, we learned that Dr. John died. But let's go out now with a piece from Dr. John, all right?
Let's all just pray on it.